Here we go. I'm Nick Lawrence, Chair of the Board of Directors Finance and Audit. Today is March 26, 2026. Time is 3:15. Now call to order this meeting of the Finance and Audit Committee. Being held in person at the Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas, 1601 East Pflugerville Parkway, Suite 3301, Pflugerville, Texas 78660. Many members were notified of this meeting on March 4th, 2026. Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division of the Texas Department of Insurance or the Deputy Commissioner's Delegate notified of this meeting March 16th, 2026, in accordance with Section 2C2 of the SLTX Plan of Operation. Notice of this meeting was published in the Texas Register on March 19th, 2026, in accordance with the Chapter 551 of the Texas Government Code. Conference call-in number was provided to members of the public in a public meeting notice. Any members, Leslie Wilgenberg, myself, and Leah Bennett, are present. A quorum of two or more committee members is present. Treasurer, the following board members are also participating in today's meeting. Bev Klein,
present.
Bishop,
present.
Peter Harrison.
He's not on.
Brian Bridges. Leslie Wilgenberg.
Present.
Following stamping officers, staff, council, consultants, and liaisons are present. Please affirm your attendance for the record when I call your name. Greg Brandon, Executive Director.
I'm here.
Toby Pick, Director of Policy, Intake, and Analysis.
Here.
Yolanda Stone, Director of Information and Technology Services. Bonnie Ward, Director of Finance.
Present.
Denise Amasuita, Director of Human Resources.
Here.
Jeff McWhirt, General Counsel.
Here.
Michael Nora, General Counsel.
Here.
Denise, do you say this part?
Yes. Present for SLTX employees, Charmila Subeli and Yuba Dahal. And Marissa Gomez.
And Christian Robinson.
And Christian Robinson.
And who else? Well, that's when I'm not sitting on the table.
Exactly. That's it.
Are there any liaisons or consultants attending? Nikki Mullins from Calhoun Thomas and Mazda LLP. Alex Ron, Boss Bank.
Present.
SLA. Any other liaisons or consultants want to get their name?
Mark Thompson, Calhoun Thompson, and Matson.
Any representatives of the Texas Department of Insurance, the Texas Comptroller, or legislative offices attending in person or by telephone?
Stephanie Caporelli.
David Dodd, Office of Financial Counsel.
All board members, stamping office employees, board liaisons, and state agency representatives should identify themselves when they speak. Please mute your phones or microphones when you are not speaking. That's a procedural announcement before we get to the agenda. We will not have public comments for this meeting. Representatives of state agencies and members of the public are welcome to listen to or record this committee meeting. Refrain from asking questions of committee members during the meeting or interjecting comments during the committee's discussions. Members of the public or media, please place your phone on mute. State agency personnel may be asked questions of other agencies' policies if those questions relate to an agenda item. Antitrust activity or discussion are prohibited at all stamping office functions. Prohibition includes the exchange of information concerning individual company rates, coverages, market practices, claim settlement practices, expenses, or any other competitive aspect of an individual company's operation. All right, agenda item two, discussion and appropriate approval of the December 12th, 2025 Finance and Audit Committee meeting minutes. Everyone was provided a copy of the December 12th, 2025 Finance and Audit Committee meet minutes. Are there any revisions or corrections to the minutes? Being none, is there any further discussion? Being no further discussion, do we have a motion to approve the December 12, 2025 minutes?
So moved, Leslie Lindenberg.
Do we have a second?
A second.
Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those say no. Motion passes. The item three, discussion and appropriate action, 2025 annual financial audit review. And I'll give the floor to Ronnie Ford, Director of Finance, to present this agenda item.
I'm going to turn this over to Kathleen Nagy to present the financial audit review.
I'm going to do it, and when she'll inject things as necessary. Good afternoon, everyone. You should have received two documents from my firm, audit wrap-up letter and the audited financial. And I'm going to go over the audit wrap-up letter. On page one, we talk about the status of the audit. We have completed our audit. Our audit was conducted in accordance with auditing standards generally accepted in the USA. Our opinion dated May 24, 2026 was unmodified, which is the best type of opinion. All records and information that we requested were freely available to us. Management and other company personnel provided full cooperation. On pages two and three, we talk about the results of the audit. Accounting policies. The company's significant accounting practices policies are those included in the financial statement. These accounting practices and policies are appropriate, comply with the U.S. GAAP, they were consistently applied, and are adequately described within the summary of significant accounting policies to the financial statement. Also, there were no changes in significant accounting policies and practices during 2025. Significant estimates. Significant estimates are disclosed in the summary of significant accounting policies and the notes to the financial statement. Management did not make any significant changes to the processes or assumptions used to develop the significant accounting estimates in 2025. On page three, we talk about corrected and uncorrected misstatements. There were four corrected misstatements as a result of the audit, and there were no uncorrected misstatements as a result of the audit. The first three adjustments are same as last year. It's not unusual. They're mostly reclassification entries. The company accounts for investments on a singular trial balance GL account number. And for reporting purposes, we're required to distinguish between long-term investments and current investments. But total investments did not change. This is a location issue for the audit report. The second adjustment is to record the fiduciary fund activity for 2025. And again, this was same as last year. The management does not keep this current throughout the year. Also, I'll mention it is immaterial. We're simply booked to get it up to the right number. Item number three. Lease liability, again, this is a location issue within the audit report. I believe the organization uses a singular GL account for this liability, but for reporting purposes, we're required to distinguish between current and non-current. And lastly, we have this one's new to this year, and it's simply total investments was correct, but it was U.S. bonds were debited instead of mutual funds and corporate bonds. Again, this is a presentational thing only. Total investments were correct. Okay, and I mentioned that there were no uncorrected misstatements. So everything found has been booked, whether it was material or not. Okay, on page four, we talk about internal controls of the financial reporting. In planning and performing our audit, we consider the company's internal control of financial reporting as a basis for designing our audit procedures, but not for the purpose of expressing an opinion on the effectiveness of internal control, and that's normal for this type of engagement. We then present a definition of the three types of control deficiencies on page four. At the bottom of page four, we noted that we did not see any material weaknesses during the engagement. And again, that's the highest level of assurance I'm allowed to give on this type of. Pages five and six, we talk about other required communications to those charged with governance. There were no disagreements with management during the audit. We are not aware of any instances where management consulted with other independent accountants during the year. Prior to being retained as auditors, there were no major accounting issues of concern discussed with management. We encountered no significant difficulties during the audit. We requested and received a representation letter from management, which management has either provided or will provide. There were no other issues arising from the audit that we consider significant and relevant to those charged with governance. And there was no discussion with management concerning alternative accounting treatments. Page seven, we talk about independence. Our engagement letter dated July 17, 2025, describes our responsibilities in accordance with professional standards and certain regulatory authorities with regard to independence. This letter also stipulates the responsibilities of the company with respect to independence as agreed to by the company. So for further information about independence, please refer to the engagement letter. Lastly, I wasn't going to go over the financial statements in detail. You've already seen these numbers, and I just went over the adjustments with you. So unless somebody has a question, that concludes my presentation.
Back to Nick.
You got anything else?
No, there's.
Okay. Is there any discussion or questions from Ms. Ford regarding the 2025 year-to-date financial review? Ms. Ford, do you have a recommendation regarding the 2025 year-to-date financial review?
I recommend to accept the 2025.
Thank you. Okay, so that is just us saying we're okay taking this to the board tomorrow.
Correct.
Okay. Agenda item four, discussion and appropriate action, 2026 finance year-to-date update. Moving to agenda item four, this board will discuss the 2026 year-to-date updates.
For the 2026 year-to-date
okay. Well, Marie used to always go with us for dinner. So
that would be revenues for $148,284, which is 7% for everyone. And $228,850, 18% year to date. Investment income was $7,518, 6% under budget for the month, $30,500% year to date due to the market declines. Operating expense was $115,706, which is 17% under budget for February, $150,784, 11% year to date. Salaries and benefits were $97,031, which was 22% under budget for the month, and $189,790, which is 21% over year to date. this timing difference of PTO approved in January budget month. Professional services is $11,713, which is 19% under budget for February, and $6,449, which is 6% year-to-date due to the timing of legal, audit, and MLI payments. Conferences and education is $1,628, which is 19% over budget for the month, $4,940, which is 31% under budget year-to-date due to timing differences of budget at conferences. We go down to travel and entertainment, which is $613, which is 111% over budget for the month. $2,457, 63% under budget for year-to-date. As I said earlier, this is timing difference for the budget at conferences. Occupancy and operating expenses, $4,677, 10% under budget for February, and $13,252, 16% year-to-date. General and administrative expense is $1,132, 1% under budget, or $4,942, 2% year-to-date. Contingency expense used resulted in $3,394 savings for the month and $6,964 year-to-date. Operating income for February was $16,656 and a loss of $289,685 year-to-date, less than the budget income of $56,752 for the and $120,662 primarily due to the timing difference of PTO in January. The change in investment value increased $76,708 in February, $47,014 year to date. Are there any questions on the 2026 February show versus budget numbers?
All right. Let me just ask this, but is there any discussion or questions from Ms. Ford regarding the 2026 year-to-date financial review? Or do you have a recommendation regarding the 2026 year-to-date financial review?
You have the reserve balance update that I need to present. Do you have any recommendation?
Okay, moving to agenda item 5, Ms. Ford will discuss the reserve balance review.
It says the unrestricted reserve funds beginning 2026 fund balance was $32.8 million, which is $16,564,766 over the maximum for the year, which is $16,207,990 maximum for the year. Reserve's year-to-date net losses $242,671 resulted in a fund balance on February 28th of $32,530,585, which is $16.3 million over our current maximum. We're really above our maximum right now. Are there any questions on our fund balance right now?
Are there any questions or discussion regarding the reserve balance review? Ms. Ford, do you have a recommendation regarding the reserve balance review?
Recommendation.
Speaking to agenda item 6, Ms. Ford will discuss the investment and cash management policy annual review.
On this one, I'm going to turn it over to Alex from Frost Bank.
Thank you. And so I'm Alex, but I work with Frost Bank. It's nice to see y'all again. I appreciate y'all giving me the opportunity to help y'all's organization with the investment reserve. Exhibit A is just the investment policy that we operate under. Going to the investment objectives, main objective is preservation of capital, provide liquidity, and also return. And also to achieve an adequate return. So when we built this portfolio, all of those objectives are satisfied by the investment lineup that we have. As far as the investment restrictions go, they are listed there. I'll affirm those here in a second as far as restriction. As far as the eligible investments, we do have several of them. The portfolio is mainly certificates of deposit and other fixed income securities. You are also allowed to invest in equities and alternative investments. That's not something that's in the portfolio at the moment. Main objective being capital preservation. Equities and alternatives do that more investment risk than fixed income and CDs. So we've stayed away from those. We can add some equities to the portfolio in the future. It's just not something that is in the portfolio at the moment. As far as alternatives, I think that's probably a good thing. We don't have those in the portfolio at the moment. You've seen headlines about the issues with some private credit funds or freaking withdrawals. They definitely do not satisfy the liquidity requirements that y'all have in your investment policy. The acceptable portfolio investment allocation is below. I'm going to skip that for now. We'll touch on that again here in a second. If you want to skip forward a couple of the slides as the portfolio currently sits, all of our investments are publicly traded. All of our investments are denominated in U.S. dollars. No voting securities or corporations are owned. No more than 10% of the portfolio is invested in one corporation at cost, and no more than 25% of the portfolio is invested in any one industry at cost. Our listing of investment right now, CDs, U.S. Treasury bills, and Treasury notes. We do own taxable domestic corporate fixed income securities, and we own open-ended mutual funds that also invest in taxable domestic fixed income securities. Portfolio weightings at the moment, half the portfolio is in FDIC insured certificates of deposit. One of the notes on the investment policy is that any CD must remain FDIC insured. So we make sure that all the CDs owned in the portfolio are below the $250,000 limit per institution. So if you look, I think there's 70 different CDs at the moment. Every single one of those provides you all with FDIC insurance. We also own Treasury bills and Treasury notes. One of the difficulties in investing in CDs of that size is we buy a lot of them, and we've sometimes run into issues of finding new banks with eligible FDIC insurance. So we also buy Treasury bills and notes. They provide similar backing. That's not FDIC insured, but they are backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government, which also backs the FDIC. So they're about as safe as you can get. We do own domestic corporate fixed income securities. That part of the portfolio has been winding down. There were corporate bonds that were owned. We've been reinvesting those into CDs and then also into fixed income owned through open-ended mutual funds. So 32% of the portfolio is now in short duration domestic fixed income mutual funds. The next slide, tiny numbers, I apologize. The next slide shows estimated income for the next 12 months, as well as estimated income plus principal maturities on that same time frame. So over the next 12 months, the portfolio is estimated to have $1.3 million of income that comes from dividends paid from the mutual funds and also interest payments from the CDs, treasuries, and corporate fixed income that we own. If you look at principal maturity as well and add that to the interest you will receive, it'll be over $11 million coming due to the organization over the next 12 months. So if liquidity needs if there are liquidity needs, we have ample cash to provide those for the organization. The last thing I touch on always is just the headlines. Obviously, there's been a lot of them lately. It didn't take me long to find five headlines regarding interest rates and inflation. That's kind of been the big talking point the last couple of years, starting in 2022. When we saw the uptick in inflation, interest rates got to a point where they actually made investing in CDs and fixed income somewhat profitable again. We saw the interest rates on, say, a short-term CD go from 0.01% to 5% in 1 year in 2022. Obviously, the Fed has had to raise rates to combat inflation. Since the start of 2023, there's been a gradual decline in interest rates and to the point where they sit today. Going into the year, I think our expectation was that there still would be a 2 interest rate cuts. However, with the increased energy prices we are now seeing from the Iran escalation, I don't want to call it war, energy prices are going to affect inflation here in the next coming months. So if we look at the February inflation report, it was hotter than normal, just meaning it was higher than everybody expected. And that didn't even have the higher energy costs baked into it yet. So we do expect inflation to tick up, which means we're not sure if the Fed will lower rates again. For y'all, not the worst thing in the world. Higher interest rates is good since the portfolio does make its money based off current interest rates. Inflation's never good for anybody. That being said, one way we make sure we combat the risk of inflation is by making sure our portfolio is properly laddered. So in the last slide, you saw we have $11 million coming due in the next 12 months. If inflation does tick back up and rates go back up with it, we're going to be able to reinvest a significant part of the portfolio into the new higher rates as they go up. So we're keeping an eye on it. Current strategy is trying to just spread reinvestments over 1-2 and a little bit longer duration. So we're making sure to hedge duration risk to make sure that if anything picks up, y'all are in a great position to profit from it. Aside from that, that is really all I have.
Is there any discussion or questions from Ms. Ford regarding this agenda item? Ms. Ford, do you have a recommendation regarding the investment and cash management policy annual review?
No recommendation.
I now give the floor to Mr. Greg Brandon, Executive Director, and Christian Robinson, Senior Data Analyst, to discuss the annual stamping fees analysis.
All right, thanks, Nick. So as you know, and you'll see, we do this every year, but this is an interesting opportunity for us, for both the Finance and Audit Committee and the full board to really discuss the stamping fees. So with that, I'll hand it over to Christian. He's done a lot of analysis on this, a lot of math, so he's going to
Well, thank you. And thank you all for having me today. And for those of you who I haven't met before, or if you're as bad with names as I am, my name is Christian Robinson, and I'm the Senior Data Analyst at SLTX. And today I'll be walking you through our 2026 stamping fee analysis, which is a comprehensive look at the adequacy of our current stamping fee rate for both reducing reserves and maintaining financial stability. And I'm also going to walk through what the data tells us about the current state of the market and what our options are going forward with respect to the stamping fee rate. Now, before I dive in, I want to set an expectation up front that this year's analysis doesn't necessarily point to a single obvious course of action. So my intent today is to lay that out as transparently as possible, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you all have at the end. Now, as always, it's important to ground this discussion in the plan of operations. So in Section 1B7C, it instructs the board to recommend to the insurance commissioner a stamping fee rate as measured by premium to be charged on all surplus lines filings submitted to the stamping office. Now, that recommendation must be submitted within 30 days of the annual meeting, and it must include whether the board recommends to raise the fee, to lower the fee, or to take no action. I think given what Ronnie just presented on the state of our reserve balance, I did not consider a scenario for raising the fee. So we will explore keeping the fee where it is, and then 2 different scenarios for potentially lowering the fee. Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's perfect. Now, equally important is the plan of operations guidance on the undesignated fund balance. So, again, the plan of operation establishes that if projected reserves, they must not exceed 2 times the average audited expenses over the previous 5-year period. And should that reserve balance exceed that maximum threshold, then the board must submit with a written plan for reducing those reserves within a reasonable time, given existing market conditions. Now, before diving into the analysis itself, I want to take stock of where the fund balance currently stands. So at the end of 2023, the undesignated fund balance was at $32.7 million. And by the end of last year, it came to $32.8 million, so roughly flat with where we started 2 years ago. Over that same period, the maximum allowable fund balance has been increasing. So it stood at $12.5 million 2 years ago. And at the end of last year, it is estimated to be $16.2 million. And I should note that at least as of me putting this slide together, the 2025 numbers were unaudited expenses, but those will be official once the audit is accepted.
Question, does any of that reduction in the end of year numbers reflect the contributions to the new pension initiative we had?
They do, since those are included in the operating expenses. So the gap between the actual balance and the maximum was approximately $20.2 million at the end of 2023. And at the end of 25, it now sits at $16.6 million. So we have seen some progress in reducing that gap, but it still obviously remains a substantial gap. And the pace of that reduction is the central topic for today. Now, I want to walk you through first the structure of today's analysis. So there are three primary levers that drive our reserve balance, and those are the stamping fee revenue, the income that we receive from investments, and operating expenses. So for each one of these, I'll walk through both a historical view and a future outlook. And with stamping fee revenue specifically, I'll offer a geographic comparison to other states and present a break-even analysis. From there, we'll look at updated projections and a scenario analysis that models different rate options moving forward. Now, this slide shows the complete history of the stamping fee rate since the stamping office's inception. So one notable observation is that on average, the rate has changed about every 3.5 years throughout our history. And the current rate of 0.04% has been in effect since January 1st of 2024. So we're now 2 years into this current rate cycle. Now, to give some context, from 2007 to 2016, SLTX retained the same 0.06% rate for a full decade. And then in 2017, that rate was increased to 0.15%. to help cover costs associated with what later became the SMART project. And then as the scope of that project changed and the surplus lines market at the same time entered a hard market with rapid premium growth, that rate was cut in half to 0.075% in 2021 and then lowered again to the current 0.04% effective January 1 of 24. Now, not only is the current stamping fee rate the lowest in Texas stamping office history, but it's also currently tied with Illinois and Minnesota for the lowest rate nationwide. And while Texas is tied for the lowest rate in the country currently, Florida did announce a few weeks ago that they are lowering their stamping fee to 0.03% effective July 1st of this year. Now, keep in mind that states don't compete on fees and each has its own unique market conditions and constraints, but knowing where we stand just provides some perspective as we evaluate what our next step should be. Some other notable states of similar size to Texas are Florida, again, who is planning to reduce their fee to 0.03%. New York has a 0.15% rate and California with a 0.18%. Now, this slide is the most data dense one in the presentation, so I want to walk through it carefully. So the table here shows the stamping fee revenue, investment income, and operating expenses, so those three levers over the last 3 years, along with two rate figures, the stamping fee rate for that year and what I'm calling the realized rate. So first, I just want to define what I mean by the realized rate, because it's an important distinction. So the realized rate is simply the total stamping fee revenue that we collected during that period divided by the total premium reported to us. And in practice, it typically takes about 3 to 6 months for roughly 90% of transactions to reflect a new rate, because the rate is assessed based off of when a policy is written, not when it's reported to our office. So as an example, there were many policies in the first half of 2024 that were in effect in 23, but reported in 2024. And so they had the 0.075% rate rather than the 0.04% rate. And over time, those two rates should converge. As you can see, in 2024, that realized rate was 0.045%. And then last year, it converged on the 0.04% and was at 0.042. Now, the break-even rate is the rate at which SLTX would need to assess fees in order to exactly break even every year, considering stamping fee revenue and investment income. So what you'll notice is that the break-even rate has been declining over the last few years. So 2 years ago, the break-even rate was 0.055%, and this last year, it was 0.041%. Now, that declining trend in the break-even rate is meaningful, and even if you look past 2023, historically, our break-even rate has sat close to 0.06%, and that's been pretty consistent. But this reflects a growing contribution of the investment income within this equation, and as well as stabilizing of expenses over the last couple of years. Now, looking at where the projections that were presented to the board last year, looking at those alongside with what actually occurred in 2025, the alignment here is strong. So on average, we projected that stamping fee revenues would be $642,000 a month, and it came in at about $641,000. So that's almost exactly on. So the premium increase that we saw last year wasn't unexpected. It was anticipated within our modeling. Now, the stamping fee revenue, like I said, came in consistent with what we projected, and that gives us confidence in our analytical framework that we're using to forecast premium and that you'll see in our projections later on. I do just want to give a caveat before moving on that there's always the potential for unforeseen events too, which is why updating these projections every year is so important. Now, this slide shows the trajectory of premium growth over time, and it tells an important story about where the market might be headed. So as you can see, after several years of rapid double-digit percentage growth year over year, we are now starting to see that growth slow. So it's worth noting that premium decreases year over year are historically very rare in the surplus lines market. And when they have occurred, they have consistently been followed by subsequent increases in premium. So this context also matters when we think about the stamping fee rate, because if premium growth continues to slow or temporarily reverses, history at least tells us that that trend is likely short-lived. Now, building on that premium growth discussion, this slide shows the direct impact of the stamping fee rate on revenue. So after the revenue increase we saw in 2023, which was driven largely by accelerating premium growth, revenue has declined over the last couple of years. So 2024 saw a significant drop after the lower 0.04% rate took place. And 2025 came in about the same as it did in 2024, especially in the latter half of the year. And again, I want to specifically draw your attention to Q4 of 25, where revenue was particularly soft and noticeably lower than prior quarters of that year. If that trend continues into 2026, it will enable us to cut more meaningfully into those reserves. And now I want to turn to investment income, which this is the component of our financials that has gone a meaningful change over the last few years. So historically, investment income was essentially a rounding error within our break-even analysis, and for the most part within the stamping office history, it was so immaterial that it wasn't even worth modeling separately. It might represent a few hundred thousand dollars in a strong year, but it didn't really move the needle on reserves in any meaningful way. But that is no longer the case. So the combination of two different factors has significantly changed this picture, and they began around 2022. First, there was a sustained higher interest rate environment that took hold nationally. And second, the volume of invested assets that SLTX holds as a result of our elevated reserve balance. Now, the result is that investment income has grown substantially over the last few years, going from 0.7 million in 2023 to 1.4 million last year. And now I'm going to move to the third lever, which is operating expenses. So this chart illustrates the year-over-year variability in SLTX operating expenses. And I know there's a lot going on this chart right here. So I just want to point out that the orange line is pure dollars. So total operating expenses for each year. And the blue bars are the year-over-year change from the prior year. And one thing that stands out here immediately is how variable expenses have been year to year. And this isn't an arbitrary fluctuation. It reflects the reality of how SLTX has operated historically. So expenses tend to peak in years associated with significant operational changes. So the most notable example being the smart development, and another example being the intentional investment in employee compensation of a couple of years ago. But outside these inflection points, the year-over-year changes in expenses are relatively contained, often negative or reflecting only modest increases. Now, this tells us that SLTX's underlying operational cost structure is relatively stable. Now, understanding this pattern is important for the scenario analysis that I will get to at the end, because even though each scenario assumes a steady growth rate in the future for expenses, in reality, operating expenses are likely to fluctuate a lot within that time frame. Now, this slide presents the scenario analysis for the fund balance, and it models three different growth rates for expenses. So we have 3% annual growth rate, 7%, and 10%. And each one of these is projected through 2030. So each scenario also assumes a 4% annual return on any reinvestments, and it includes the projected stamping fee revenues with the current stamping fee rate. Now, the key takeaway here is that under all three scenarios, the gap between the actual reserve balance and the maximum balance continues to narrow. No scenario results in that gap widening, which reflects the ongoing impact of the reduced stamping fee rate working as intended. And now here's a slide that's the heart of today's discussion. So here's where I've modeled three different rate scenarios. So you'll see the top green line is the projected fund balance with the current 0.04% rate. The blue line is at 0.03%. And then the lower one, the black line, is 0.02%. And now first, the good news here is that under every scenario modeled, the reserve balance does eventually reach the maximum threshold. The variable that differs more meaningfully across each scenario is the timeline. So how quickly we get there and how smooth or volatile that path is along the way, that's what's different between each scenario. And I do have a few observations that I want to highlight. First is the 0.02% scenario. So while it does contribute to reducing the reserve gap, a rate that low would almost certainly necessitate a subsequent increase at some point in the not too distant future. Now, this scenario also doesn't consider any material change in expenses at any point over the next 10 years, which certainly could occur if there's any change in legislation or any other meaningful changes in how SLTX operates within that time frame. Now, by contrast, the 0.04% scenario, so the current rate, is the one that best mirrors the actual operating environment that we're in currently with current market activity. So it's calibrated to run just slightly below the break-even rate, which keeps the reserve reduction on a measured, sustainable trajectory without falling so fast that it would require course correction after that. Now, of course, if premiums begin increasing beyond what is currently projected, then that could necessitate another reduction in the stamping fee rate to reduce reserves meaningfully. And if, unsurprisingly, the 0.03% rate sits in the middle of those two. So under this scenario, reserves could still be reduced to the maximum balance if premiums increase more than what's currently projected, but it could also necessitate a subsequent increase in the stamping fee rate if SLTX operations materially changes or premium slows over a sustained period of time. Now, based on everything that I have presented today, my current recommendation is to take no action on the stamping fee rate at this time. Reported premiums began showing signs of plateauing mid-2025, and maintaining the current 0.04% rate supports the long-term stability goal for the stamping fee rate, avoiding the kind of oscillation that would occur if we reduced to 0.02% and then needed to increase again shortly thereafter. And I do want to highlight here that the changing the stamping fee rate does put a burden on our industry members. So it's not just as easy as changing the rate. And the 2025 stamping fee revenue did align very closely with what we projected, which validates our modeling approach here. And the reserve gap has now declined for two consecutive years, demonstrating that the strategy that the board adopted 2 years ago is working. Now, SLTX, of course, will continue to monitor market conditions and reserve levels closely to reassess the rate adequacy as the picture evolves. And if there's any significant changes in the market or if operations shifts materially, that will factor into our future analysis and recommendation. So with that, thank you all for your time, and I'm happy to take any questions that you have.
I had three observations. One, excellent presentation. Exciting to hear from you all the time, and the work you've done in the past validates everything you're projecting for us, Christian. So it was fabulously easy for us to understand.
Thank you.
So thank you for that. I welcome other discussions here from the chair or the chair of the committee, but your conservative strategy seems to make sense. And maybe adding on to that, the biggest question I would have if we wanted to make a change, what type of unanticipated expenses like the AI initiative or something like that in the next year or two are coming down the pike that could increase our expenses enough to make us regret very quickly reducing the stamping? That's probably not projectionable.
Right. Yeah. I think that's
me uncomfortable.
Right. And like you said, there's always unanticipated things that could happen. But I think generally what we've seen with operating expenses in the past is that there's a lot of planning and foresight. So I think we'll know when those changes are coming down the pipe and they won't just happen upon us one day. And then we can adjust accordingly if something like that does happen.
You'd only make an adjustment once a year during the annual meeting, is that right? In other words, there's no opportunity for an interim adjustment, but next potential adjustment date's not that far away. It's a year away anyway. Right.
And that does also bring up an important point too, which is that at least historically, when we recommend a rate change, it's been applied in January of the next year. And then, like I said, there's a 3 to 6 month lag before we really see the impact of that rate.
But to add to the commentary there is nothing in the plan of operation that prohibits us from discussing it again. It's just it requires us to do it at this meeting. So if there were something that required a significant change quickly, we can do that directly at any time, right? You could even call a special meeting to talk about it.
But you wouldn't be able to take action to the next annual.
No, we could. We could make a recommendation to the because we have, and I don't remember the years, but I want to say it was about 20 years ago. We had mid-year stamping fee adjustments. So they were raised like in July. So
right.
I don't remember the years off the top of my head.
Even 1 year it was April. Just, yeah, I don't know.
Strange.
Right.
There's a definable decrease already. We've seen that.
Right.
That's...
Well, and we've talked about the burden that it does. I mean, this, these changes, if we do it and then we've got to turn around and reduce it again, I mean, or to bring it back up again, it's each time we're doing it, it's, it does affect a lot of people.
It is cumbersome on the agency and brokerage community.
And on you guys.
Yeah. The other, you know, another point there is, as Christian said, historically, on average, we do it every 3.5 years, and we're just coming out of year two. So if you just, if you're only trying to be kind to the brokers that are going to have to adjust all of their systems, you would give them another year and a half to not have to do this. So
just, they're really not, they don't really, truly, we don't hear of an issue from them for the most part, right? I mean, we're not.
On the current fee?
Yeah, I mean.
No, there's no, we don't receive any feedback. Our stamping fee being too high or too low. The last time we changed it, the only call that I got was don't change it at all. It was so onerous
for
systems to change it. So that was, that single point of feedback was simply don't cut it in half again.
Yeah.
And I would anticipate if we cut it in half again, I would get that call from that same person.
Is there a state tax imposed on the stamping fee? That changes from state to different from state to state, but I don't know if it's subject to the premium tax. Stamping fee subject to premium tax? Do we know?
Subject just to tax? I don't think so.
No. I mean, it's different than a tax, right? So right, the premium tax is 4.85%.
Right.
And our fee is 0.04. Right. Yeah. So it's, I guess if you're a buyer, you would consider it a fee similar to a tax.
Right. I added on
to the tax.
State doesn't get any.
No. Right. No.
One way or the other. Right. Yeah. It doesn't go. Our fund is completely separate from the general fund. Right. So they're not commingled or intermingled or anything like that. So there's no sharing of resources between the two organs, comptroller and us.
Right. Is there any discussion or questions for Mr. Brandon or Mr. Robinson regarding the 2026 year-to-date financial review?
None for me.
No.
I think we mean the annual stamping fee analysis.
Thank you.
Having no other business on today's agenda, I'll move to adjourn. Wait here a second.
Need to...
If you'd like to make a motion to carry this forward to the board tomorrow, I can suggest that. So I would recommend that you make a motion to carry the same recommendation of take no action to the full board for review and discussion tomorrow.
All right. Say that again.
I'll make a motion that we carry, you good with that? We carry this forward to tomorrow's meeting where we will consider and look at take no action.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. Having no other business on today's agenda, I'll move to adjourn. Do I hear a second? Adjourned at 4:08.